Strangers and Aliens, Episode 91.
Strangers and Aliens, movie series.
Gravity. Hello and welcome to Strangers and Aliens, a podcast where we talk about sci-fi, fantasy, and Christianity. And I am Ben Avery. I am one of three hosts who you would normally be hearing on Strangers and Aliens. However, as seemed to be kind of the trend with the summer movie series, and now that this isn't really a summer movie, but it's a movie and I really wanted to review it because it's just kind of a counterpoint to Riddick in a lot of ways, and to Elysium as well. I saw this movie and I had to talk about it. Unfortunately, my cohorts, Steve and Dr. Jace, they haven't seen it, so they can't really talk about it with me. I know what I'll do. I will call up a friend. I'll phone a friend. Let's see. Oh, I have a friend from high school who I think probably might have seen this movie. I'll have to ring him up. I've got his fake phone number right here to call him on the fake phone. So here I go. Hello, John, are you there?
Yes, I am here.
Hey, John Canos. This is Ben Avery, your friend from high school.
Hi, Ben Avery, my friend from high school. How are you?
Good. Do you remember me from high school?
I do. You know, it hasn't been that long since I saw you last.
Yeah, I guess that's true. We have seen each other just in the last couple months, but we're friends from high school, so.
Yes.
Yeah, so John, I'm calling you on this fake phone call to talk about the movie Gravity. I'm assuming you've seen it.
Yes, I have. I went and saw it Monday night.
That's also the night I went and saw it.
So we were watching it together.
Yeah, except you were watching it in a much better theater from what I understand. So as you know then, John, usually I don't call people to join for a movie review unless Dr. Jace or Steve have not seen the movie. They have not seen this movie. I don't know how you feel about that. I don't know if you can trust them anymore with their opinions. But
I listened to your most recent episode. I think I listened to it Monday or maybe even yesterday after seeing the movie. And I think I recall one of them or both of them saying that they weren't planning on seeing it, and that just really lowered my opinion of them.
Yeah, well, we need to change their mind with this. And so, Dr. Jace, Steve, as you're listening to this first half of the review, and listeners, I would remind you that the first half of this review will be spoiler-free. You are not going to be spoiled if you have not seen Gravity. We are going to talk about what we liked about it in vague details, and then we are going to also tell you if we recommend it or not. And then after you've seen it, you can come back and listen to the second half. But yeah, Dr. J. Steve, listen to the first half of this review and then go see the movie. Or don't even listen to it. Just go see it now.
Right now.
Okay, so I guess I've spoiled the review a little bit. But yeah, so Gravity. Last time I saw you, actually, we went and saw a sci-fi movie together. It was the Star Trek Into Darkness movie. Darkness. Yeah, which was a big summer tentpole movie. And so now we're talking about Gravity, which is not a big summer tentpole movie. In fact, it feels kind of dumped here at the end of summer. Well, in the autumn, even the fall, if you would.
But you know, I think it's strong enough to have been a summer movie.
I would agree with you there. I don't know if it's marketable enough to have been a summer movie, but man, I just had to talk about it. When I saw Riddick, I had to record that episode because I was so angry at that movie. I don't know if you listened to that one. You said you hadn't listened to any of the ones that you hadn't seen yet, but
right.
You know, that one is almost entirely spoiler free. when I get to the spoiler section of that review, I play the spoiler music. There's just one statement that I made after that was something that surprised me. But Riddick, I hated. I hated it so much. And then I was thinking, you know, we left the summer through with Elysium and Riddick. Did you see Elysium?
I did not.
Okay. That one I actually would recommend seeing, but that one also made me a little angry because it was just bad storytelling for me. I recommend seeing it because there's stuff to see there, and it's a decently made movie. It's just I had some real problems with it. So I went from a movie that I said, yeah, go ahead, see it, but I've got problems, to a movie that just made me angry and made me want to ask for my money back. And then I go and see this movie. And summer is over. We finished the summer movie series. And boy, I wish we could have finished on this one. Because
it made up for all the others, right?
It definitely made up for a lot. That's for sure. So we have a specific outline that we follow for the most part with the summer movie series. And we always start with grading the movie and kind of, I guess, spoiling our review. But I think we've already done that a little bit. So what grade would you give this movie? And we give it A through F. You know, C is passing, D is not good, but still passing, and then F obviously being failure, but then you have B and A. Where would you drop this?
I think I'd give it a solid A.
Just a solid A? That's all you're giving it?
I'm very particular about handing out A pluses.
Okay. Yeah, I would agree with you, though. This definitely, it's close to an A plus, but exactly. I would agree with you with that A. Man, yeah, there was some problems maybe with the science of things, and we'll get into that a little bit, but I didn't notice. I had, you know, even having people mention it on Facebook before I went and saw the movie, I didn't care. There was one point we can talk about where maybe it was a problem, but this was just it was a small movie, a small story, but beautiful. And you saw it in IMAX, am I right?
I did. IMAX 3D.
IMAX 3D. Yeah, I saw it in regular theater, but it was 3D. So what was that experience? I mean, how did that feel?
It was awesome. I really enjoyed myself. Sometimes you talk about a movie being a popcorn movie.
Uh-huh.
I never go to the movies without getting popcorn. But this was not a popcorn movie. I actually did not finish my popcorn. I forgot to eat it.
Nice. So what were your expectations going in then?
I kind of avoided any major spoilers on what the storyline was. Really all I had seen were a couple of the trailers that were on TV and on YouTube beforehand. I kind of went into it not knowing exactly what to expect from the story, but I just, you know, I knew it was going to be a space movie, obviously.
Yeah.
And I knew I knew that I should be prepared to possibly get motion sickness. But that didn't happen.
I did not expect this movie. I mean, I went into it just expecting it, hoping for it to just be, you know, one of those, I don't know if quiet sci-fi movies is quite the right word, but I mean, you know, not a Star Trek where everyone's just running everywhere and yelling everything, you know, or not a, or even a Doctor Who in that way. But hopefully not, and I say this with all due respect because I love this movie, but also not a 2001. You know, where it's just kind of a slow, methodical, you know, we're just going to show you things. Look, there's a thing. Look, there's another thing. And doesn't this make you think about things? Maybe, you know. So I went in just expecting it to be, you know, just a movie. And it was more than that. I mean, it was an experience. It was an experience. I really, man. Okay, so let's talk about the story a little bit. There's not much story to it. You know, you said you avoided spoilers. If you've seen the trailer, you do have a general idea of the story. because the story is these people are in space and things happen and they're not they're kind of cut off from their ship, and you know, it's called gravity because they're like, well, they're flailing around in zero gravity, and it's all kinds of just craziness of trying to get from one place to another through space, you know, before air runs out or before meteorites hit or I guess debris or whatever. And so there's not much of a story there, but then it's the characters. That's, I mean, what you're watching special effects and characters, I think. And what did you think of the characters? You basically had George Clooney and Sandra Bullock, and that's pretty much it for the entire movie. And they have to carry that entire thing. But were you into the characters? I mean, were you? You said you didn't eat your popcorn, but were you not eating your popcorn because of you're biting your nails, or was it because you're wanting to know what's going to happen next to these people?
Definitely the second.
Okay.
Yeah, I was definitely engaged in the story of the characters, and you know what this movie really is a. It's a survival movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And you know, there really isn't a whole lot of backstory to these characters given. I think there's just enough that it makes you care about what, you know, who they are and what happens to them.
Yeah, and they tie some of that backstory into like specific events of what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so when she does one thing toward the end, it's like a callback to some of the dialogue that she had with George Clooney as they're bonding and just staying alive, you know, and he's just keeping her talking to just stay alive, you know, and don't give up because there's always hope, that kind of thing. What about the special effects? I mean, I don't know if we can say enough about the special effects for this movie. I really felt like I was getting a little bit of vertigo,
yeah.
Looking down at the earth and just feeling like, whoa, I wonder if this is what it feels like. I really wonder if this is what it feels like, because it was gorgeous. It was a beautiful, beautiful experience there.
And that scene from and this is in the trailer, so it's not really a spoiler, that scene where she goes spinning off into space,
mm-hmm.
that just, you know, you in the movie, you're seeing it for a bit longer of a period of time than you do in the trailer. And that was just mind blowing.
Yeah. Well, and kind of moving from special effects to style, I don't know if you noticed this, but in that first, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 minutes, it's meant to be one continuous camera movement. I don't know if it really, I mean, obviously it wasn't, because we're talking about special effects. So
right.
There's places where they're like when they move away from an actor's face and then you're looking at the earth and then it kind of spins around. So you're looking at another actor's face or something, but it's just one continuous camera movement and it is so neat. There's one point where the camera zooms in on a character's helmet and then spins around
through it.
Yeah. And then you're inside the character's helmet.
You're seeing things
from their point of view.
That,
yeah.
That POV.
It's just really, I mean, we're talking about a well-made movie, and that really drew me in. And
I was expecting a well-made movie. I don't know if you follow directors at all, but this director, Cuarón, I think is how it's pronounced.
I don't know. I really know nothing about this director.
He did a movie a few years ago called Children of Men. Have you seen that?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
He did that one.
Well, that makes sense then.
You talk about that long camera shot. He did the same thing in that movie.
A much different situation.
Yeah.
Much much different emotion that was being brought on by that. Yeah. Because in this movie, it's just going from this peace and beauty to this moment of chaos to the moment of terror as they're dealing with the chaos. And all with that one, basically one shot. And then they come back to that a couple times where it's meant to be just that one continuous flowing shot there. And the other thing I noticed was the sound and the sound design in this movie. I don't normally notice sound design unless it's something really kind of out of the ordinary, because most sound design now is meant to just, you know, put you in the moment. When I remember, you know, I'm watching this and I'm realizing, okay, there's no sound effects here, but the music is kind of acting like the sound effect. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in space, no one can hear you scream. And so there's a couple jump scares where they, if it was happening on Earth where there was atmosphere, you'd have something like a bump or, you know, some sort of shocking noise. But instead, you just have the music kind of pop in.
I bought the soundtrack Monday night, like as soon as I got home from the theater, and I've been listening to it constantly since. And there's like this repeating theme throughout the soundtrack where the music will build and build and build until it's just blaring super loud, and then it'll suddenly cut to silence.
I don't know if I would like to listen to that.
Well, it harkens back. I mean, it makes me think of those scenes in the movie.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's why I like it so much, but
I mean, it reminded me a little bit. I don't know if you listened to the soundtrack at all. It sounds like you hadn't seen the movie, but the Oblivion soundtrack, I was reminded a little bit of that. And also some of the kind of soundscapes of like the Batman Begins and the Dark Knight trilogy, where again, it's just music kind of setting tone for you, but not a melodic tone. It's setting the mood through just kind of droning or percussion.
You know, when there's things happening, you know, in the background, being destroyed and just wreckage flying everywhere, it's space, so there's no sound, but you can kind of hear it in the soundtrack.
Yeah, but then they do a good job of basically hearing what the characters would hear. And
oh yeah, I really like that. I appreciated how they heard the muffled sounds of what an astronaut would hear inside their suit, like when she's out on that telescope at the beginning of the movie working on things with her tools. You know, you hear muffled bumping and whirring, but
basically you're hearing vibrations through her suit.
Right.
Yeah,
right, exactly.
And that's cool. Again, I mean, this is an attention to detail thing that just makes this movie feel like an experience, like you are there. And it just, yeah, I wonder if I'm liking it so much because it feels like one of those rides at Disney, only without the motion of the seat, you know, or getting sprayed by water when it's supposed to be like that 4D kind of thing that they're talking about. But
this movie is a full experience. It's like the closest you can get to being an astronaut without actually going up into space, maybe.
Yeah, and after seeing it, I don't want to go up.
At least through a visual medium.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to watch that movie on one of those planes that like goes up and at the apex, you know, goes down and you're weightless for a little while. So you can be weightless with her when she's flying through the space station or whatever. And there's just some cool stuff going on there.
Yeah, then I think I might have some trouble with motion sickness.
Well, and then they have the special theater seats that do that kind of motion thing. I can't remember what they call that. We talked about it in another review, but I couldn't imagine doing that with this movie.
I can't imagine doing that with any movie.
Shaking with her as the ships are moving around, or she's floating around, spinning around in her spacesuit. Oy, yeah. Well, we've talked about her a lot. The camera is on Sandra Bullock almost, you know, 95% of the movie. So what do you think of the acting here? We have Sandra Bullock and George Clooney. I told my wife, yeah, I'm going to go to a movie tonight. I'm going to go see that new Sandra Bullock, George Clooney movie. And my wife's like, are you serious? And I said, well, yeah, it's a sci-fi movie about Sandra Bullock being lost in space. Oh, yeah, okay. So what do you think of the acting here?
I thought it was great. I mean, well, I guess I'm kind of like you. I don't go see a whole lot of Sandra Bullock movies or George Clooney movies. But, yeah, I thought she did a good job.
Yeah, I was captivated. I was interested because she let them not make her up, you know? She looked like she belonged in space. And so you could see on the big screen, you could see the wrinkles and, you know, yeah. She's aging slightly. And I do mean slightly. I think she still looks quite young, considering, boy, the first movie I ever saw her in was when we were in high school back in like 91, 92. And it was the return of the Bionic Man and the $6 million Man and the Bionic Woman. And she, on TV.
I've never seen that one.
Oh, we recorded it and watched it often. But yeah, she looks like she's been in space. She looks like, you know, she's kind of pale, and not with little to no makeup. And again, adding to that realism of what you're
she
watching.
She looks the part.
Yeah. Now, what do you think of George Clooney though? Cause he's the other main actor. There's a couple other voices going on, but he's the other guy, the other primary character. And I'm
honestly I think that character probably could have been played by just about anybody, but I mean George Clooney did like take me out of the movie at all. I think he did a good job in that role. I don't think he didn't distract from it in any way.
Yeah, I did feel like when he was talking, though, was a little weaker than Sandra Bullock. I felt like he was more acting and she was more in the moment. But maybe that, without getting into spoilers, maybe that actually was part of what he was doing as the character. You know, because he's supporting her. You know, he's the supporter.
He's kind of her coach through this, this disastrous situation.
He's mentoring her in a lot of ways, and he's pushing her to survive. So, okay, so let's talk about some themes here, vaguely. I should have said this up front, but the first half of the summer movie series was always spoiler-free, and so the last half is going to be when we get into spoilers. But some vague themes. One thing you mentioned was this is a survival movie, and one thing I saw getting brought up often was hope and having hope and kind of that where there is life, there is hope. They don't say those words outright, but they kind of imply that. You have anything else to add to that, or without getting into spoilers? That's the difficult thing about talking about theme.
Yeah. There are very strong themes of life and death and rebirth in this movie, sure.
Yeah, that's true. Well, obviously, she's facing death.
Right.
But she's also had some situations in her life that get brought up from her past where she's had to face death as well and hasn't done it well. You know?
Right. In a sense, she's gone to space to escape from her problems rather than face them.
Yeah. You can't get much further away with
right
than in space. So how do you think this stands against the actual summer movies then? And now we're talking, I don't know which ones you've seen, but we're talking Star Trek, Man of Steel. What else we got going on in the summer here? Iron Man 3. Riddick, Elysium.
Yeah, I'm sure I haven't seen as many as you have, but I will say this. I came out of the movie, and the first thing I tweeted on Twitter was that I liked this movie better than Man of Steel.
Oh, so you went right there then with it.
Yeah, of all the summer movies that I have seen, I think this one, for me, this was the best movie I've seen this year so far.
Okay, wow. Yeah, it definitely goes up there for me. I don't know if I would put it, if I would replace Man of Steel, because it was Man of Steel and Star Trek Into Darkness that were the two top contenders for me this year. It's just, it's so different, though. I mean, it's a serious movie. It's not, a like you said, a popcorn movie.
It's just... And I come at it from the perspective of, you know, that was my very first reaction right after seeing the movie. And when I think back to my first reaction right after seeing Iron Man 3 and Star Trek and Man of Steel, you know, I wasn't as... I enjoyed all those movies, but I wasn't as blown away by them as I was by this one.
Are you planning on seeing this again?
Oh, absolutely. I would love to go see it again in IMAX 3D. I probably won't, just because it's so expensive. But
you're planning on getting it on DVD or Blu-ray or whatever?
Yeah, and I may go see it in the theater again.
I'm looking at a situation similar to the one that I had with Dark Knight and Avatar. With Avatar, I'm glad that it happened because, in retrospect, it was not nearly as good as I felt like it was when I first got out of it because of the 3D experience that it was. I can't imagine watching that on a 2D television in my living room, that little rinky-dink little TV that I have. It just, there's no way I would watch Avatar there. When I went and saw Dark Knight, I saw that in IMAX twice, and once with my brother and once by myself. And that movie, I did not want to see again because it was the IMAX experience. It was just such an experience. I ended up watching it again because Dark Knight Rises, and you know, I wanted to see it and remind myself what had happened. But I have a feeling that this is going to feel like that too, where if I watch this on my little TV, am I going to have the same experience, or will there be enough goodwill from this first experience that when I watch it again, I'll remember that and be drawn into the characters again as well? I don't know. But yeah, this is definitely up there as one of the best movies of the year. Definitely better made than those other two? Man of Steel and Star Trek? Possibly.
I would definitely go there. Yeah.
So, all right. Like, do you?
I think that this movie, I wouldn't be surprised if this one was, you know, at least nominated for an award. You know, the other summer movies, you know, they could, but.
Well, this one is. I don't see Star Trek Into Darkness being nominated for Best Picture. Man of Steel, there's an outside chance possibly, since now they're doing 10 movies every year for the Oscars anyway. You're right. I could see this happening.
I mean, most summer movies get nominated, I think, for stuff like, you know, special effects and cinematography, but I could see this movie getting nominated for something beyond that.
Well, I could see it getting nominated for special effects. I could see it getting nominated for... Honestly, I could see Sandra Bullock getting nominated for this. And I don't think I'd see the screenplay getting nominated. Because like I said, I mean,
It's simple.
It is. It's sparse. And it's meant to be. I mean, that's not a knock. That's exactly the way it should be for this movie. But I could see it, yeah, getting nominated for Best Picture. I could even see this. I'm not seeing many other movies other than the genre ones, so I don't know. I can't really put it up against anything. But, yeah, I could see it getting nominated and winning Critics' Choice Awards and stuff like that. I haven't seen any reviews for this movie, though, so I don't know how well it's being reviewed. But, man. Do you recommend this movie, then, after all of that?
I don't know. Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. If you like that kind of thing.
I do recommend it.
And who do you recommend it to? And is there anyone you would not recommend it to?
I would not recommend it to people who are prone to motion sickness. and if you are, definitely definitely don't go see it in IMAX 3D.
So who do you recommend it to?
I recommend it to anybody. I would take my 13-year-old son to see it. I think my my 9-year-old's probably a little too immature for it, but definitely 13 and up, I'd recommend it to anyone.
Do you remember what this is rated?
I think it was PG-13.
I'd imagine it is. There's a slight amount of language, not too much, but there was some.
Yeah, there was a little.
And there's definitely the thematic stuff going on of facing
danger.
Yeah, facing death, being put in peril. Yeah, and there's some violent images. There's some really. There's that one,
yes,
way up front that, oh wow, that was quite a view there.
Yeah, if I take my 13-year-old to see it, I will have to warn him about that ahead of time because he's a little squeamish.
Okay. But... yeah, wow, that was a I was surprised by that, but again, we're not going to spoil it. We're going to move to spoilers in a moment here, but. Yeah, definitely. I recommend this highly, highly. So, Dr. Jace, Steve, see this movie, man. You got to. This is one of the best sci-fi movies of the year. Maybe even this would end up on some of... This might even end up on some of my, like, all-time lists.
Well, Ben, you said you hadn't read any reviews of it yet. I've read a few, and it's getting a lot of really strong reviews from critics and audiences. And there have even been some, like, NASA folks saying that this is the best space movie they've ever seen.
Yeah. Although, who is it? What's his name? Neil Tyson?
Yeah, we can ignore him.
Okay. Yeah, he tweeted all the problems with the science and... But even I read those before I went and saw the movie, and I didn't care. Even knowing some of the stuff he had said, I'm like he's talking about her hair, mm-hmm, that is not flowing around. And I'm looking at her hair, trying to see. It's short. She has it cut short. Does he know anything about women's hair? You know, like it's so short that honestly, you know why it's short? This is my guess, but it's short, so they didn't have to do those special effects. So they didn't have to worry about, like, having her, you know, hair swirl around her head. It's so short that the sweat itself would cause it to be just matted against her head and, you know, defy the lack of gravity. He did tweet something about, like, you know, I still like the movie. This is just what I like to do, or something like that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I didn't read any of that stuff before going into it. And honestly, I didn't notice any of that stuff that he pointed out.
Well, there's one thing I'll point out to you when we get into the spoilers. So I think we should move into spoilers. What do you think?
Agreed.
Okay. So I'm about to play the spoiler music. You have been warned. This music is about to play. And as soon as it plays, anything goes.
Spoilers. Spoilers. Spoilers.
Okay, so the spoiler music has played. If you are still listening to it right now, if you are hearing my voice, it's because either you don't care about being spoiled, or you've seen the movie, or some terrible accident has happened. The podcast is still playing, and you're laying there helpless, unable to stop the podcast, or presumably call for help. And so I hope that that's not your situation. Possibly what's happening is you're listening to this podcast in, you know, a space capsule, and you are just expecting to just die in that space capsule, and you're just listening to our voice just to hear something and you know, just to have company. So again, I hope that's not really happening, but, and this is kind of weird company to have if that is the case. But speaking of that scene, John, have you heard about this extra on the DVD when it comes out?
Yes, I have. And I have been hoping I would get to watch it before then, because apparently it was played at some film festival a few months back, and I guess one place I read said that they were airing it with another movie, We're the Millers, which doesn't really make sense to me why they would air it with that.
Okay.
But if nothing else, it's supposed to be a extra on the DVD when it comes to video.
Yeah, so this is a short film by the same director, and it's like a 7-minute story about the guy who was talking to her on the radio, on the AM frequency, when she picked it up and she thought it was, she was talking to like Chinese Mission Control or something like that, and turns out it was just some guy. It sounds so interesting.
He's an Eskimo or something.
Something, yeah. I really want to see this, and this is reason to buy the DVD in some ways, and reason for me to watch this again. What a movie. So, you know, we're into spoilers now. We can talk specifically about things. What are some things you enjoyed about this movie? About Gravity.
Where to begin?
It's a hard question. After I said it, I was trying to think, well, what's my answer? Because I enjoyed the actual, like, seeing the spacewalks and seeing,
yes,
you know, the scenery behind them, the star fields and the Earth, and, you know, the time as it's changing, and you're seeing the sun rise over the Earth. And just it makes them seem so small. And I think there's something of a humanist message there in some ways, of just the smallness of humanity. But at the same time, it's a reality. We are small in this universe. But just I can't even imagine what it'd be like to see that on IMAX.
It really depicts the vastness of space, and like you said, how small the astronauts are,
and the starkness of space too.
Just lost in it.
Yeah.
One thing I enjoyed near the beginning of the movie was just seeing the astronauts enjoying themselves, especially that one. I guess I say nameless character. He had a name. I just don't remember what it was. But the guy who was, like, dancing.
The red shirt, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he's out there dancing while they're doing their work.
Well, he's jumping. He's like, woohoo, and he's jumping against his tether, you know.
Yes, just waving his arms and legs. And
doing the Macarena.
The Macarena. Yeah. Having a killer time.
No. Yeah, and that reveal, because this is the character that they go and retrieve his body. Because they still think that the shuttle is intact, and they're going to go back to the shuttle.
Right.
And
right.
that image.
That was the first real shocker moment of the film.
And she just looks right through his head. There's the Earth behind him. Whoa, wait a minute. Yeah. What am I looking at? Oh, that's what I'm looking at. Yep.
Yeah, I think I might have emitted some kind of audible yelp in that scene.
And this is the one thing that I found very interesting, is that in spite of the seriousness of this movie, and maybe because of it, there's still these jump scares where it's like, dead body face, and Rubik's Cube, you know.
Marvin the Martian.
Marvin the Martian. That was awesome. Somewhere out there, there's a Marvin the Martian getting ready to enter Earth's atmosphere.
Among other things.
Yeah, well. And just the savageness, then, of these debris fields. And, you know, and then her extraordinary luck in her spacesuit that not one thing actually hit her or hit, you know, Clooney. And I have to say, when Clooney showed up toward the end, and I'm thinking to myself, no, that can't be real. She's dreaming as she's dying. And I was trying to figure out, well, what point did she die? You know, how long has she gone without, you know, where she's just unconscious? And I was thinking back to when she had hit her head and stuff like that. At first, I was like, this is so cliche. She's dreaming. And then I realized, well, wait a minute. This is I was won over by him and by her then, too, where he brings her the information she needs. Of course, it's the information
she already has.
Is coming from her, obviously, but it's coming voiced through the voice of this man who has died, and it's impossible that he could have showed up. But so I was liking that stuff. I liked the character. I liked the way that they were able to tie in a lot of ways, you know, where she never went home, she says. After her daughter died, she got the call while she was driving home. And since that, she would get off work and she would just go drive. And she was never really driving home. And I think maybe she did go to the house, but she wasn't going home. And then when she finally is going to get in this pod and I'm going home. It's time to go home, to drive home. Not just to drive, but to drive home. And I like that call back there. And that was some good character stuff going on. And so you had her actually having closure and revelation, and then at the end it's the triumph of the human spirit, and the camera goes down really low as she stands up really tall and spreads her arms out.
That was the hero shot.
Yeah. But it was meant to be that. I mean, she was so small throughout this whole movie, and then she's on solid ground again, and she's in gravity. I also liked the whole juxtaposition where they're in space. They go through all that, and then she lands in a pond of some sort, and she can't get out of the pod because the water is crushing down on her, and then the pod starts to sink, and she can't swim. Gravity has her. She's like,
yes.
It's like the gravity is just getting more and more of a grip on her, and she has to get that spacesuit off so she can get out of the water. But it was nice. It was nice little, I don't know, irony is probably not the exact word that I should use here, but just that juxtaposition, you know, that there.
We talked about in the first half about the themes of, you know, rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you see that scene, it's about halfway through the movie where she's in the airlock and she gets out of her suit for the first time and she's just kind of floating there in an enclosed space. In the fetal position, it looks like she's in a womb.
Yes, definitely.
And then that scene at the end there, like I was actually thinking, this is like her being born. You know, she's coming out of this pod and she's struggling to escape the water. And then she finally gets on land and she just has to struggle mm-hmm. to get to her feet and take those first steps.
Yeah, that's definitely a part of what's and that's definitely on purpose. I mean, that's not being read. I mean, you're not reading anything into that. And that's another thing. I'm liking this movie. I do believe this is a very humanistic movie. Or it's meant to be a very humanistic movie as far as the triumph of the human spirit. But there's these ideas of hope, and there's these ideas, mm-hmm. you know, where she's, you know, they talk about the afterlife, and they talk about her daughter and how. Clooney has joined her, and you know, the theological implications aside, you know, she talks to Clooney throughout the movie. At the end, she finally is out of the water. She falls on the land and she says, "Thank you." And I'm just, I was trying to figure out, okay, is she thanking God or is she thanking Clooney? but she made it, you know, and she says, "Thank you." And she's laughing, you know, this whole time, she's kind of going through an existential crisis of why should I survive? You know, why do anything? That's actually a question that's brought up. Why do anything if you're just going to die? And it's an interesting question, and it's something that, you know, everyone has their existential crisis where we're going to die, you know, but what does it all mean? And what are we going to do with the time that we have? And that's where she decides not to commit suicide and, you know, to let herself actually try. And why not try, you know? Why not struggle? What else are you going to do with your time? Just listen to some Eskimo sing and make his dogs bark at you, you know?
So. And don't forget his baby.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that was interesting too.
Yeah.
You know, bringing those ideas of life. I couldn't help thinking with the baby. She hears the baby, and I think she was feeling like, it's okay for me to die because, well, there'll be others.
There's new life.
Yeah, there's new life. So, okay. Any nitpicks? Anything that you were thinking? Oh, I don't know about that. Because I've got a big one.
There's just one. And it's after he rescues her and they're on their way back to the, I guess it's the International Space Station.
Yeah.
And they're just, he's out of fuel and they're trying to grab on anything they can as they fly through. And, you know, he misses everything, but she has him and she gets her feet tangled up in those ropes, whatever they are, parachute ropes,
yeah.
And she's getting pulled farther and farther from the station, but she's slowing down. And then she's just dangling by like one strap. And he says, "I have to let go or I'm going to pull you away." I didn't buy that.
I didn't understand that, yeah.
The physics didn't seem right.
I think that was
purely for story purposes.
Yeah, that was the one time where I felt like it didn't feel true. The physics may not have all been true, but other than that one moment, they all felt true. And yeah, that was the one where I didn't understand it, because if they are weightless or essentially weightless, the pull of the Earth isn't enough for him to be a real drag on her, I wouldn't think, but... Yeah, they reached the end. They've stopped moving.
Right. She had already slowed his momentum enough that even if he had unhooked from... Well, he did unhook from her. He shouldn't have drifted away.
Yeah.
At the very least, he should have just stayed where he was and then...
Yeah.
You know.
And that was... Something like that had to happen for the story to take the turn that it needed to take, which is he helps her get there... But then he is gone, and he's going to tell her things that she needs to know to get home, but she is surviving alone. So he had to go somehow or another, but this felt wrong. It was the one misstep, and emotionally it was right. Emotionally it was the right thing to have happen.
Yes.
It was just the physics of it where I was, wait, okay, it's done. Next thing, you know.
Well, and you know, for me, it didn't really even take me out of the story so much. It was something that I thought about after, you know, it was all over. Mm. And then it didn't sit right with me.
Most everything felt right as far as the physics of the movie felt right.
One interesting thing that I read today in one of the reviews from like an actual NASA person, that they were just pointing out that no real astronaut would ever go past a fire on a space station and not put it out.
Oh yeah, that little fire at the beginning, or when she was first on the space station. Yeah.
Now that's not as big of a deal in the movie to me, because, you know, she's just gotten on board. She's just gotten out of her spacesuit where she was almost about ready to pass out from, you know, carbon dioxide.
Mm-hmm.
So I can forgive that, I think.
Yeah. And I'll say this too. Almost everything in the movie pays off for something else. You know, she puts out the fire with that fire extinguisher, and when she first blasts it, it pushes her back. Well, then what happens? As she's escaping the fireball that's flowing through the space station. She gets into the little capsule and she goes to close the door and pulls, you know, it closes down on the fire extinguisher. So she pulls it in to get it out of the way. Well, then that ends up being something she needs later. And she uses it. You know, she used it originally, accidentally, and it knocks her back. Well, now she thinks, oh, this is what I can use to give myself momentum. And there's payoff for things like that throughout the whole movie. Payoff for, you know, I've flown the pod in the simulations, but I've crashed every single time. And that kind of thing. So, you know, she knows when she gets in there, she knows what she's doing. And it's nice when she's in the Russian one and she's able to pull out the instruction manual. Then she gets in the Chinese one and she has to do these things by memory, but it's Chinese words on the buttons and stuff. But so, and then going back to thematic ideas, you know, we've talked a lot about that. So I don't know if there's anything more you want to add now that you can spoil it, but...
Well, one thing that I was thinking about just today was the I know that the movie is obviously not intended as any kind of picture of a Christian worldview, but I thought about how the movie does, even though they're not trying to show like concepts of sin and salvation and rebirth, When the debris first hits, not only is she separated from her crew and she's spinning off into space and she's completely helpless, she can't do anything to save herself. And they're cut off from, you know, they're cut off from Earth, they're cut off from communication. And then, you know, George Clooney's character, I wish I could remember his name, I think it's Kowalski. You know, in going to save her, he's sacrificing himself. If he hadn't gone after her, he would have had enough gas in his jetpack, whatever, to get to where he needed to be himself. But because he went after her, you know, he sacrificed his own life to save her.
Yeah, and you could also argue that going and retrieving the body of their comrade as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, would have added to that, and he would have been able to just get there and be there. So, yeah, I mean, that's storytelling, you know, cliches, you know, where you have the sacrificial character who, you know, gives up his life to save your main character, and your main character is the one who has to overcome not just great odds, but also usually some sort of personal thing that you can really definitely see kind of that that sin, that sin metaphor, you know, from Frodo in the Ring to even, you know, Luke Skywalker having to overcome his father's legacy of evil. And now here's something I wanted to bring up with you, John.
Okay.
Which makes it really kind of fun to be able to talk with you about this movie, because I'm watching Sandra Bullock, and you know who I am really reminded of? I am reminded of Sigourney Weaver as Ripley, especially in that, like, the first Alien movie, just where she is. This feels like the same kind of movie as that first Alien movie. It's that survival kind of thing where she's just trying to get by. She's not equipped necessarily to do all the things she has to do. And she's overcoming all of this. And I'm watching this and I'm thinking, this feels like the Alien movie. And maybe the short hair helped too. Although, did Sigourney have short hair? I can't remember.
No. I don't think she had short hair in the third one, but not the first two.
Okay.
I guess it got shorter.
She had sweaty hair, though.
Yeah, she definitely sweaty hair. She had it tied up.
Yeah, so the point being, though, this felt like, you know, I was wondering, would a remake of Alien with Sandra Bullock work? You know, because it felt like that kind of mood, you know, it's that those moments of peace, and then there's moments of tension, and then there's moments of terror. And, Yeah, I mean, she did it all really well, but in a more, you know, modern setting without any monsters and more realistic and that kind of thing. But yeah, and the reason it's interesting that it's you that I'm talking about this movie with is because you're the one who loaned me that movie in high school. and you're to blame that, you know, I now have the quadrilogy sitting on my desk here. So
the quadrilogy. You have the fourth movie.
Oh, I've watched it a couple times too.
I've never seen that one.
You've never seen it? You need to see it once. Just, do you like Firefly?
I do.
Okay, you need to see it once just to kind of see where Joss Whedon was coming from before Firefly, because there's a lot of little seeds of Firefly in the crew of, well, just there's some seeds of the Serenity crew within that movie. Yeah, I mean, it's something to watch. It's something to watch just to be aware of something he was doing beforehand.
Okay. There's not to ideas. Not to be a completist.
Yeah. I mean, you'll enjoy Firefly regardless. You know, this is just something, if you really want to get and dig deep, you can go there. So,
okay.
Yeah. And you can stop there then. Don't worry about Alien versus Predator.
Don't worry about that. I won't.
Or Alien versus Predator Requiem. Although, did you see Prometheus?
Yes. I own that one.
Yeah. I like that. So, okay. Well, now we're talking like high school friends. we're just chatting. We're not reviewing. So, I think actually, though, I think we can pretty much close this down then. So, I don't know. Do you have anything else you'd like to add? Anything we've missed? Any final words about this movie?
I'm trying to think, but... No, I think we covered it all.
And if we haven't covered it all, I think this would cover it all. If you like good sci-fi, this is there for you. Go for it. See it.
Yes.
It won't be as impactful if you're watching it on the small screen, but I have a feeling it still will be enjoyable. I'm guessing that, but yeah. But that's why I wanted to do this, because, man, after Riddick... Oh, yeah. That movie. This should have been the last movie of the summer for me. I came home and told my wife it made up for the bad taste. It washed the bad taste of Riddick out of my mouth.
So. I have been spared that. I haven't seen any Riddick movies.
I like the first two ones, and I like the cartoon that they made. But I don't see myself ever going back, and I see myself actually... This movie made me retro hate Riddick. So I see myself probably dropping off my Riddick DVDs at the secondhand DVD place. Yeah. Well, I might try and get a dollar or two out of it.
Okay.
So it won't be a complete loss. And I did hear there were a couple people who said, okay, they're not going to go see the movie. They're not going to see Riddick based on my warning. So I feel like I've done my duty there. You know, it was worth me spending the $7 or $8 to save them the 7 to 10, depending on where they see it and when. So, all right, John, well, thank you very much for joining me. I really appreciate it that I could talk about this movie with someone. And Dr. Jace, Steve, you aren't listening now because you've turned it off because of the spoilers, but yeah, you need to see this movie. So, all right. Well, all that said, you want to sign off, John?
Say signing off.
All right. And Godspeed, everyone. Thanks for listening to the Strangers and Aliens Summer Movie Series. You can email us at podcast@strangersandaliens.com or leave us a voicemail at 1-804-37-ALIEN. That's 1-804-372-5436. We'd love to hear from you. You can also go to our website, strangersandaliens.com, leave a comment on the blog, or check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/strangersandaliens. We're also on Twitter, Strange and Alien. Check us out.